Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Why is it that Thanksgiving is celebrated almost exclusively in the United States and in the Dominion of Canada? And how has it been celebrated, and how is it celebrated now? Professor Hugo Freund teaches social and behavioral sciences at Union College in Bourbonville, Kentucky, and visits with us about the roots of Thanksgiving, beginning in the 1600s in what is now the northeastern United States, through its role as a gathering of friends and family without sectarian religious direction. Hugo Freund wrote his PhD thesis on this topic. This program was recorded in 2002 at the annual meeting of the American Anthropological Association in New Orleans, Louisiana, in the lobby of a rather noisy hotel. It was first broadcast in 2009 after most of the hotel's background rumble could be electronically hushed. We began our conversation by discussing how the contemporary concept of Thanksgiving is acknowledged in this century. Hugo Freund, welcome to Radio Curious.
Well, thank you very much. It's a delight to chat with you.
As we sit here in a noisy hotel lobby, let's talk about Thanksgiving. The origins, briefly, but maybe we could begin with the contemporary concept of what Thanksgiving is. Can you tell us?
Well, having looked at Thanksgiving and having been a fan of Thanksgiving for as long as I can recall, I think the vitality of the holiday and the reason that it has continued life is because people in their families are able to make meaningful what it means to be part of a larger group, the extended family.
Well, what does that mean, to be part of a larger group in our culture now?
Well, that's the problem. In a postmodern experience of fragmentation and broken connections, the family is one of the last preserves where you can have a sense of membership. And the context for that membership, I would argue, would be Thanksgiving.
How so? What context does it give us?
Well, I like to say that Thanksgiving, unlike a lot of other holidays and festive celebrations, is a frame with no content. In other words, the rules for celebrating the holiday are not specifically religious, although they do invoke patriotism. Thanksgiving is not prescriptive. You have to follow a certain, let's say, script, but rather in our multifaceted and multicultural life in these United States, what I think Thanksgiving provides instead is a time off, a breathing space.
Well, how has it evolved to be the time off or the breathing space?
Well, that's an enormously complicated question, because even in traditional societies, there was an interest in celebrating when the ingathering of the crops has been successfully accomplished. In other words, societies as a whole have an inclination towards celebrating the fact that they've got enough foods available, presumably to get them through tough times or winter weather or periods of food scarcity.
But that's not the case in modern America for the past 70 or 80 years. The food for Thanksgiving is something that's purchased by most families in the commercial marketplace.
Yeah, and Thanksgiving, like Christmas and some other holidays, have certainly gone through a period of transformation. The historical locale under which they've experienced this transformation, of course, would be the mid-19th century, where these commercial systems of food distribution and the industrialization of food stocks certainly play an important part in how the holiday changed. so that you could find, instead of wild turkeys, domesticated raised turkeys in the markets of the big cities. And instead of hunting your own, which was in some areas an important component of Thanksgiving, you would take your monies and purchase them.
Which is pretty much what happens now.
Oh, yeah. Although in some rural areas to this day, Thanksgiving is not Thanksgiving unless you yourself have gone out and actually hunted the wild turkey and brought it home, or hunted some other ingredient instead.
You talk of a change mm-hmm. of the way Thanksgiving was celebrated to the way it is celebrated now.
Right.
Describe that change for us.
Well, I often suggest that there are three or four different threads that have come together to form what we consider to be Thanksgiving. And that easily could be a course, I suppose, or a long discussion. Let me just identify the threads for now. The first thread, I guess I would describe as cultural, in the sense that the European settlers, particularly the English settlers that first arrived here, brought with them a tradition of feasts and fasting, depending upon the circumstances of the time. During periods of conflict, chaos, or disturbance, you would have a fast. And in fact, there's a wonderful book from the early 20th century called The Feasts and Fasts of Thanksgiving. And it talks about how early New Englanders saw feasting in combination with fasting. In other words, during periods of drought, you would have a fast. During periods of plenty, you would have a festive celebration. And it's within that cultural context that Thanksgiving arose. Subsequently, historical components played a part, consumerism played a part, and politics as well.
Well, let's isolate out those three units, the historical components, consumerism, and politics, with some examples.
Okay. Should I start with any in particular?
Your choice.
Okay. Well, historically, since I've sort of been doing this cultural historical thing initially, when we talk about Thanksgiving and its transformation, gradually over a period of time, the feasting component separated out from the fasting component and had a life of its own, ultimately resulting in a general sense that once a year you had a day of Thanksgiving in the fall in New England. I would add here that historically Thanksgiving was relatively unknown otherwise, whether it be the Southeast, whether it be the Midwest. Thanksgiving as a national holiday only began to coalesce politically mid-19th century, socially in terms of people actually celebrating it early 20th century. In other words, there's been this period of evolution of the holiday in which historical elements played a part. Politically, the piece there is that Sarah Josepha Hale, a noted woman editor and writer, she was part of the group that edited and published Goody's Ladies book, and it also was known as the Goody's Women's magazine. She felt that with growing industrialization, that there had to be a context to celebrate the family and the role that women had in it. And beginning in the 1820s and continuing right through to the American Civil War, she worked to get individual states to proclaim Thanksgiving as a holiday. And gradually over a period of time, she got more and more states and ultimately territories to make these proclamations. And finally, she approached Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War and suggested it become a national holiday as a way of bringing together the disparate elements that were at that point fighting in this terrible, horrific war. Finally, then, as a national holiday, taking together history and politics, when you get to around 1900, 1920, that's the point at which it was becoming a national holiday. But in some quarters it took far longer. Groups in Pennsylvania, like the Pennsylvania Germans, were reluctant to give up their own kind of harvest celebrations, such as Harvest Home, and preferred not to celebrate Thanksgiving. So if it sounds like I've got this checkered or checkerboard kind of description of a holiday, I think that's more accurate than our general sense today, that it is a national holiday celebrated and recognized by one and all.
But in the current time, there's such a commercial aspect to promote the celebration of it.
Well, in comparison to what, I guess I would have to ask, because if you look at the relationship between Thanksgiving and Christmas in terms of commercialism, it's a no contest, a no-brainer. Christmas is the holiday that is replete with ideas of gift giving and commercialism and the purchase of things and establishing who you are in terms of what you've bought. But Thanksgiving actually has been a disaster for marketers beyond those that sell turkeys or Bell seasonings. Attempts, for instance, in the greeting card industry to establish Thanksgiving as another holiday for sending out cards was a complete failure. And the reason was because if you're celebrating Thanksgiving, there's no sense sending a card. You're with the folks generally you want to be with. And so these general efforts fail in that regard. What I would say, particularly based on interviews and field research that I've done in regards to Thanksgiving, people say the reverse. They say Thanksgiving is a counterweight, perhaps an antidote to Christmas, because the frame has not been filled with an overabundance. The frame instead, when we talk about Thanksgiving, is about people coming together to share common times, food, catch up with one another, and for most, not all, but for most, people have the day off.
I'd like you to talk in detail about the social result of family sharing those times. But first I want to say that this week on Radio Curious, we're talking with Hugo A. Freund, who is an associate professor of social and behavioral sciences at Union College in Bourbonville, Kentucky, in a conversation recorded in New Orleans, Louisiana, at the American Anthropological Association annual meeting. You are listening to Radio Curious, and I'm Barry Vogel. Hugo, the result of the families coming together.
Well, I think that's what an important distinction is between Thanksgiving and Christmas. There have been a number of scholars who have talked about the almost psychological deflation that people feel because their anticipations are not met by the holiday of Christmas. Thanksgiving doesn't have that kind of shape.
The anticipation element is lacking.
Well, the anticipation of gifts and a feeling of well-being and farewell to humankind and the like, often your expectations are not met in terms of what the Christmas celebration is. And a number of scholars have looked at the disappointment psychologically of celebrating Christmas. And I guess what I would suggest is that Thanksgiving does not fall prey to that same kind of process. You don't anticipate certain gifts. You're not concerned about your ability to purchase all that you wish for friends and family. Instead, Thanksgiving is more of a social occasion in which people come together. Gift giving is not a central component, and instead it's the chance to spend time with one another.
But the main focus then is the feast and the presentation of the feast that has evolved with certain prescribed foods.
Well, there again, in terms of food consumption and Thanksgiving, it's not remained constant either. Our notion that Thanksgiving should be a large turkey carved by the head of the household and served with cranberries and potatoes and so on. That kind of dietary complex actually is also from, let's say, the mid-19th century.
Well, what was it before then?
Well, it was an evolving kind of food meal, let's say. It was an evolving kind of menu. If you look at the initial descriptions from the 1620s, when New Englanders first established a toehold at Plymouth Rock, the character of that meal makes no mention of turkeys, for instance. When the king of the local Indian tribe was invited to celebrate the ingathering of the crops, which were successful after the first winter of tribulations. If it were not for the Indians bringing large deer to be made into venison dishes, as well as duck and some other things, there wouldn't have been a communal festive celebration. In other words, it's not just the food and the menu that is different. The shape of the holiday was different. This was a community celebration. People came together to enjoy the community's company, and the Indians were invited to contribute to that. The event itself, and here I should say it's based on the work of Dietz and others who have looked at the ethnogastronomy of the earliest Thanksgiving celebrations. That's James Dietz who did this work, among others, Jay Anderson. What he found was that this celebration was not of the interior. It was not a familial celebration inside a home. This was a festive celebration of a community sort. The few remaining women who were still alive at that point cooked the meals for all, and people gathered along long tables in a communal meal that included such things as competitions and shooting competitions, possibly archery competitions, in which skill was established.
What do you mean the few remaining women who are still alive?
Well, following the arrival to New England that first winter of 1620 and 1621, they were ill-prepared, ill-stocked with food, ill-sheltered, and as a result, that community, like many early American communities, suffered devastating losses of human life. And as such, there were few women left to help with the food preparations at that time. And that was one of the reasons for the celebration in the first place. They survived the winter, the initial crops had been harvested, and they knew that at least for now, they could handle what may come next.
What occurred to bring Thanksgiving to include the traditional foods that are commonly served now? The turkey, the cranberry sauce, the sweet potatoes, the stuffing?
Well, I would say that part of it is this theme of growing commercialism and the ability of turkey farmers to ship their product along railroad lines in the 19th century. But I would issue one caution here. Do not presume that actually even today that the menu at homes from Boston to Portland, Oregon are all the same. They are not. There's a scholar, Ian Holm in San Francisco, who says to the effect that you give me the menu of a family gathering together for Thanksgiving, and I can tell you where that family is and what social standing they have. The critical point I think he's trying to make, and rightly so, is that even to this day, Thanksgiving is a frame rather than a set of prescribed rules. By that I mean folks can incorporate food traditions of their own ethnic background or social class, such that it's not a prescribed meal in the way that television or the local supermarket may think it is.
Hugo, let's talk about the nature of the holiday, the content of the holiday. It's flexible. In some cases, it's missing. It doesn't have a religious aspect.
Yeah, that actually was the framework I used when I completed my dissertation. I came to realize that if you expected a set pattern you would not really engage in the character of the meaning of Thanksgiving for those who are participating in it. I mentioned earlier the idea that Thanksgiving is a kind of a frame which families can subsequently fill. What I mean by that is that even to this day, each and every November, the President of the United States issues a proclamation, and you can look in the back pages of your local paper and actually find it. That proclamation, and I would add here that Thanksgiving is not a national holiday prescribed by Congress, but rather the President declares it each and every year, provides a frame in the sense that we then generally have that day off. Beyond that, having that day off and some modest critical components, most expect to have turkey, maybe some lively homemade cranberry sauce and the like. But beyond that, the frame is vacant or empty. And by that I mean how a family chooses to celebrate the holiday might really be dictated less by convention and expectations of American society as a whole, and more so by the folks who are coming together at a particular locale. And the shape then of Thanksgiving is very much based in the family that pulls it together. For instance, is the Thanksgiving celebration of a particular family only a limited number of individuals? Is the Thanksgiving celebration a mega blast that incorporates all of the family members plus the neighbors? This came to be highlighted for me anyway in the period when I was first starting this research, and I asked people, I said, what's your Thanksgiving celebration like? Some people said, we don't because we have a dysfunctional family, and I think that's an important thing to say. And others said that our Thanksgiving celebration is specifically defined by blood and kin. In other words, you cannot attend unless you are either related by blood or by marriage. Other families dictate that any and all can come, and if it's too small, it's not Thanksgiving. I guess my key point here is when we talk about Thanksgiving, it's who is there and how do people make it meaningful? The answers to those questions really are answered by those that come together to celebrate. And therefore, the menu, the people present, the shape of the holiday, how people offer or do not offer benedictions, or do offer or do not have specific stuffing, that's all variable. That's what I mean by an open content. People are provided with an armature, they're provided with some possibilities, but families then fill it with meaning, depending on the family.
Did you find in your research that the structures would change within a family from year to year?
Yeah, absolutely. What I came to realize after I completed my dissertation is that although we talk about the tradition of Thanksgiving, that is some idealized glow rather than a reality. In other words, Thanksgiving, like other holidays and traditions, are subject to change. And the participants, the shape, the place, the menu, all of that is subject to change. Death, the sale of a house, the availability of a relative, somebody moving off because of a job, all of those are factors that can tremendously affect who comes together in a given year.
And the community effect of having this kind of celebration would be, I'm talking about the community of the family as opposed to the larger community.
I think the community of the family is the result rather than the impetus. In other words, people come together for presumably socializing and other kinds of activities, and in the process of coming together, you are establishing a sense of identity and participation. And it's this coming together and the changeful character of this coming together that enables the sense of being a part of community in a family to be.
Well, Hugo Freund, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious. And before we close, I'd like you to take a minute and tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately.
Well, I'm still trying to finish it. It is a recent title that's just come out in paperback about the relationship between the Pope in the 19th century and the Jews. It's a historical work that looks at recently opened and then subsequently closed papal archives on the relationship of the Pope and his secretaries and others to the Jews in terms of their attitude towards the Jews, their efforts at missionizing, and more importantly, the strident but quiet anti-Semitism that was part of 19th century papal authority.
Hugo Freund, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
My pleasure. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Hugo Freund is a professor of social and behavioral sciences at Union College in Bourbonville, Kentucky. This interview was recorded in 2002 at the annual meeting of the American Anthropological Association in New Orleans, Louisiana, and originally broadcast in 2009. The book Hugo Freund recommends is The Popes Against the Jews: The Vatican's Role in the Rise of Modern Antisemitism by David I. Kurtzer. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format. To get a copy, visit our website for further details. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org, and the phone is 707-462-6541. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for joining us.